No. You got to listen to the way people talk. You don't say affirmative or some shit like that. You say, no problemo. If someone comes onto you with an attitude, you say, eat me. And if you want to shine them on, it's hasta la vista, baby.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Yeah, but later, dickwad. And if someone gets upset, you say, chill out. Or you can do combinations.
Chill out, dickwad.
Great. See, you're getting it.
No problemo.
Wow.
Okay, so we'll go straight into new releases after that. See, we're doing, like, clever openings now, where it's not just me going, hey! So...
That wasn't very clever, though.
It was really clever. It was Terminator, and we're doing James Cameron to see how that matches up. Alright, forget it.
I don't understand.
You don't understand? I mean, it's pretty complex. So, alright, let's go straight into it. So we've got three new releases this week, which is Jackass 3D, which... I'm sure we're going to have a fun discussion about. We'll do it last.
You gave that a 10, didn't you?
I did, yes. It was my favourite film of 2010. Yeah. It's a classic for all generations. And we also got Let Me In, which is the remake of Let the Right One In, which I love probably more than I should, and Due Date, which is the new comedy by Todd Phillips. So I'll do Due Date first, because it's probably the most disposable of the three. You know, it's not as good as The Hangover. It's not terrible. It's okay. I enjoyed Robert Downey Jr. in it a lot, and he was really funny. I love him when he does comedy, because he just kind of has that like edge to him. I don't know. He manages to bring that coolness and that kind of bit just fringing on being insane to everything that he does.
Slightly more interesting straight man.
He is, yeah. I think he does the straight man thing, but he does it in a way that's always more interesting than the comedy guy. And just like Zach Galifianakis in this, he just felt like Will Ferrell like 10 years ago. He felt like it, but in his own way, it just felt like he was a fairly generic. Like comedy guy, and
well, Will Ferrell's doing pretty well. Do you think Zach Galacalola
is
gonna do as well?
I think, yeah, he'll be around for a while, but it just, I don't know, this was not the most interesting thing for him to do. It just felt like a tamed down version of what he did in The Hangover, and it wasn't very interesting for me, really. His scenes, I mean, he wasn't bad or anything, he has some funny moments, and obviously he's gonna make you laugh, but.
Any good cameos? Those films always have
this
cameos.
This is the thing. What I liked about it is they didn't do... Well, it had Jamie Foxx in it for about 5 minutes, but the role wasn't just so Jamie Foxx could come in. It was a character that fit the story, and I kind of liked the fact that it was just telling the story of these two guys on the road, and it didn't really break from that. And that was kind of cool, but...
It's been getting pretty bad reviews.
It has, yeah. It's been a bit trashed, and like a lot of people have been saying that it's overly mean on Galifianakis, but I kind of like that aspect of it, because it's like, if he's just like... And like... Like the Dinner for Schmucks arc was, where he was just tolerant of the idiot relentlessly, and that would have been less interesting. I like the fact that this guy would make you angry, and he made Downey Jr. angry, and I thought that was more credible. And he made that role stand out a bit more than Paul Rudd did in that, where I didn't even notice he was on screen most of the time. So you know, it's all right. It's a solid 6 out of 10 movie. You'll laugh, and then you'll forget about it when you leave.
What would you say The Hangover is in comparison to that?
I think The Hangover is like almost the best. Like generic studio comedy could be, and it's like it's not amazing, but it gets all the familiar beats. It gets absolutely right, and it's like, and it's funny.
Yeah, yeah.
So even if it's kind of stupid, which it is, it's all right because it made me laugh. I think this made me laugh a little less than that, and it's equally as stupid. So you know, lower grade, I guess that's how that works.
That makes the lack of a Bradley Cooper.
Well, obviously, Bradley Cooper is what makes the original Hangover great.
Such a douche, isn't he?
I don't know.
He's like your go-to douchebag.
I don't know. I just don't know why he has a career. He's kind of like him and Jeffrey Dean Morgan. I don't understand.
See, I don't understand you two. I don't think he's that unlikable in The Hangover.
He's just such a douche.
He's quite unlikable.
He's just, I don't understand how you can see him and not go, massive douchebag. I want someone else to be honest with you.
He's got a bit of a douchebag face, doesn't he?
He's got a douchebag smile, he's got a douchebag voice.
He's got that, I know,
he's got
douchebag
hair, he's got a douchebag everything. I don't know, just, you know.
That makes him even douchier, the fact that he's like playing douche.
Have you seen, Wedding Crashers, right?
Yeah.
I liked him in that, because he was playing a douche, and yeah. You probably hate the film. I kind of
hated that film. Yeah.
But he's quite funny in it, no?
No, I've never seen a Bradley Cooper performance I liked, I'm sorry. Like Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Everyone likes Jeffrey Dean Morgan, but I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
I think I've only seen the Dean in Watchmen. I can't think of
anything
else.
He's in Weeds a tiny bit.
I saw him in The Losers, where he had the lead role, and he was just...
You don't get it.
Don't get it.
Let's move on.
So we'll move on to Let Me In, which is the remake of Let the Right One In, which is, I think, my favourite film of 2009.
Possibly mine as well.
I put it on my greatest of the decade list, and there were no other 2009 ones. It just, I don't know, it was like... What do you think made that original so good?
Because it was so original. It's part of the reason. It was like, it felt original to me.
The setting was original, and the style and the feel and everything.
It was a really original tone.
I agree.
It was original,
story,
like Old Boy's original. Old Boy's just conventional revenge film,
yeah.
But it's really
But the
original.
Thing is, the story's not just familiar. It literally is Twilight, it literally is True Blood, is where this vampire comes into a small town and that person falls in love with him, and that is a time worn.
I think you're narrowing it down to its very
bare. Oh, absolutely, that's what I'm saying, but on the barest premise of it, which is what the first thing that he comes up with and the first thing they sell you when you see the trailer, is this, the vampire comes to town and these children fall in love, and that is it's a common storyline. But what makes it great, like you said, is the execution. Yeah. And the way it's done, it's so subtle, it's so like affecting, and it's just it's scary in places. It's just everything about it got right. And that just, it tainted the, I can't view this objectively. I just can't.
How can you watch Let Me In?
I think the thing is, this is what I think about it. I think if you see Let Me In, if you've not seen Let the Right One In, you're going to give this 7 or 8 out of 10. You're going to think it's great. You're going to think, oh my God, this is a really interesting movie that I've never seen before. But if you have seen it, you're going to see all the same scenes done slightly less well, and it just, you just can't...
Just what's the point? Learn how to read. It's so annoying.
I mean, you could say that for so many as well. They're just pumping them out. It's just
They're remaking the new Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and everything.
It's like, and with these things, it's like with The Ring, I didn't mind it as much, because with The Ring made it like at least an effort to be its own identity. I think this literally is... Obviously, it's a similar film, but, you know, it had its own stories and shit. It had its own style. This just... I felt it was the same.
Shot for shot, nearly?
It's not shot for shot, but, like, all the character beats are exactly the same. Or there's so many scenes that are taken out of the original, and you just compare the two, and it's just basically the scenes are there, but they've lost what made them good. And it's not terrible. I don't want to slag off. Chloe Moretz is great, like, really good, and I was very impressed by her, and I guess Cody Smith-McPhee doesn't screech too often, which is kind of nice. He's got a very high-pitched voice, and it does kind of break the dramatic moments every now and again. But I think the most, like, the definitive way to look at this movie is, like, the Richard Jenkins character. Because in the original, that, for me, is pretty much the strongest character out of anybody. It's so, like...
Is that the old
guy? The old guy that's with her in the beginning. Yeah. And it gives, like, this poignancy to the love story. Basically, you see the end to it whilst you're seeing the beginning to it at the same time.
Yeah.
And that was such a great idea. But here, it just... It's the same thing, but all the scenes... I mean, he has almost exactly the same amount of scenes, particularly in regards to, like, the character scenes. They're just the same, but don't work as well. And obviously, that's not Richard Jenkins' fault, because he's great, but it just... The subtlety and, like, the magic has gone. I don't know how else to phrase it. It's just what made it great, whatever that mysterious
Poor
thing
Richard.
Was, has gone. I know, it's just... That character, I just kept thinking, it's pointless. Why is he in this movie? Whereas in the original, he's perfect. He's the best thing about this movie, and that was the thing. And I couldn't really get over that the whole time. And just like, yeah, I don't think I'm the best person to review this, because I'm going to go through it going, that's not as good as the original, that's not as good as the original, that's not as good as the original, but...
Yeah. That's going
to
be
that's
the case.
That's not as good as the original, so what do you want to do?
If you're going to remake a film, then that's necessary.
That's necessary,
like,
exactly. They're doing this, they're not doing this film for me.
Don't expect people just to ignore the original because you're remaking it and judge it on its own merits, because, frankly... That's hard to do if you've seen
exactly.
The original.
Exactly, it's impossible to do, particularly as recently as this. And
do you not think that though maybe the whole point of the original is for the like large audience that haven't seen it?
Yeah, the point, this is the thing. It's not for me, it's not for critics. It's for people who wouldn't see that movie because it had subtitles.
People
can't
read.
And for them, like I said, it's going to be a great movie. They're going to come out thinking it was great, and they're going to go, 6 out of 10, you're insane. But
yeah.
It's too inferior. The tone, the director just doesn't get what made it great. It doesn't get the subtlety. For example, like the mother, do you know how the mother's fairly absent from the original? He does this whole visual gimmick where you don't see her face in shot the whole way through, and even though she's in quite a few scenes, and it was just,
like Tom and Jerry.
Like Tom and Jerry. It's like, I get that there's no connection between the two, so you don't have to force it that much, director, for who directed Cloverfield. I don't know. It disappointed me. I was expecting it to be better, probably because of how similar it was. I think it needed to break from the original a little bit more.
You said at the start of this podcast that you loved it more than you should. And I was saying it
the original.
You.
Yeah. I mean, I have like a slight partiality to horror as it is. But I think what was great about that is that the horror, it was almost superfluous. And it was just such a great, like romantic story that I haven't seen done in a long, long time.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about the original when you said
the original,
that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Whereas, like, the remake, I think that part of it gets right the most. It gets that right more than, like, the darker aspects of it, I think, where it just kind of gets into the gore, and it's just like, oh, there's blood, and it forgets what it's talking about. And it kind of gets rid of, you know, the side character whose girlfriend gets, like...
The woman that gets captured.
And there's this whole character in the original who basically is, like, an ultimate sad sack where his best friend dies... His wife dies, and then he gets rinsed as well.
And is that not a spoiler alert, the one where she gets him to open the curtains?
Yeah, and that's such
fire.
A powerful
that's
moment.
A
basically,
scene.
They have the same sequences of where those characters are dying, but those characters are gone, and it just basically random strangers, or and then the guy has been replaced by a fairly generic cop character, and it just lost. Like,
where is it set? The remake? Imagine.
It's in I think it's in like New Mexico, but it's snowing. But they told me it was in New Mexico. It was bizarre.
Snowing New Mexico.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's okay. It's not bad. I think if you've not seen the original, it's great. But if you have, you're just not going to see it.
Just watch the original, people.
Yeah. But if you don't want to read subtitles, then this is great. You can watch the original without it. But it's, you know, it's money-making cynicism, to lack of a better word. So should we move on to Jackass?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So before I go, do you both want to tell me how wrong I am about this film?
Not really.
Well, you didn't give it a rating.
I couldn't give it a rating.
It's not applicable. I can totally understand why you would give it that.
Yeah, me too.
And I think, from a critical point of view, it's not as good as the second one.
Yeah, absolutely. We were saying, you can't really engage with it because you don't think Jackass
doesn't have the
in
character
general.
Development and the subtle plot elements.
Louis basically doesn't think that Jackass has any of the traits that you can call it a film, even. Mm-hmm. So, but me and Jamie, we really like the second one. The second one's great, isn't it? It's got like a lot more fun, energy. Everyone seems to be wanting to do it. It's like,
yeah. They looked a little bit.
They looked old and jaded. It felt very much like I need money. Steve-O's bankrupt and needs money, and
Steve-O's literally going to be covered in shit for money.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas the second one, it felt like a group of guys hanging out and doing stupid things.
It felt more spontaneous, whereas in this, everything, maybe it's because of the 3D cameras, everything felt more planned.
But like, that also did look kind of awesome at times.
Don't get us wrong, like, there were amazing moments like where the 3D's used really well. Yeah. But
they've really been conscious of the 3D, more so than a lot of films I've seen in 3D.
And most of the best skits or sketches, whatever you want to call them, are in 3D because they're the ones that they've really put the effort.
Well, the whole thing's in 3D, but yeah.
But yeah, like there's only like certain bits that were shot on 3D cameras. Like some of them are just flat.
Do you know what my problem with it is?
I can't believe I didn't notice.
Yeah, it stood out hugely for me. Maybe it won't for everyone, but like flat sequences where it's just they've shot it with a hidden camera, and there are other ones where it looks amazingly 3D and everything sticks out. And
Well, there's like the opening and closing, they really go like it's super slow motion cameras and the ridiculously
high
nice
speed
3D.
Cameras.
So you see the pain in glorious high definition, and it's quite it's quite cool. But I also think I kind of miss the older sets of just a bunch of dudes with their little cameras just fucking around, because it kind of felt, I don't know.
The other ones just feel like skate videos gone too far.
Exactly.
Whereas this feels like they're trying to be ambitious instead of just being spontaneous.
Yeah.
Right, here's my problem with the thing. I don't care. And I don't understand why so many people care, and I don't understand why it's become a major pinnacle of our generation. I enjoyed it when it was a half-hour TV show, and it was something to watch after Punked, you know, and it was just past the time. But now it's become this major movie generational event, and it's so pointless. And it's so, like, people get hit in the face. I don't mind people enjoying that, but it's become, like, the major trilogy of the last 7 years.
It makes me sad that this is so important. It's not that important, alright? It's a fun experience.
$150 million.
That's what I'm trying to say.
The thing is, Louis, like, people go and see Dinner for Schmucks because it's got Steve Carell and Paul Rudd in, and they think it's going to be funny and it's going to make them laugh. I'm sure more people laughed at Jackass than Dinner for Schmucks. As a comedy, like,
but
passes the laugh test.
It's undermining freaking cinema. It's basically coming in and saying, you don't need to make a film.
That's such a
snobby thing to say, but trust, when you get this making a $150 million movie, we're going to get things along that line. And it's depressing.
The thing is, it's not about that, though. It's just like, the reason why it makes so much money, the reason why everyone likes it, is because
people get hit in the face.
Yeah, it's a bunch of, like, you and your friends, it's like a group activity, and you feel like you know all the guys now. Yeah. Like, you've watched them enough that you feel
it's
like...
It's not just that, it's like people walking out in the cinema and, like...
Yeah, people were so disgusted they were leaving. That's great. I love to see that.
What's great about Jackass is not Jackass, is watching the Jackass with an audience.
Yeah, it's the experience.
Yeah, kind of.
So basically the film don't matter. You might as well watch a series of YouTube clips of people like
yeah, but I wouldn't watch. I wouldn't watch Jackass on my own. I'd be bored. Like, you've got to be with
this
your mates.
This is the thing. That is exactly my problem with it. It's not a film.
It's a stunt show.
It's Laser Quest. It's in a timeout with your
friends. What's wrong with that? If Laser Quest is fun.
Because I don't mind people watching it and enjoying it, but I'm tired of having debates about Jackass. I'm tired of people telling me that Jackass is great and they're looking forward to it and it's their favourite movie of 2010 and they're more excited about it than anything else,
just
when
turn
it's
off
so
your film,
pointless.
Just
and
take
it's so
your film hat off and just enjoy it.
But I don't enjoy it. And I feel
then
like I have
it.
To apologise for not enjoying it. Because everyone's like, oh my god, how can you not enjoy Jackass? But it's so much of it is like, there's like two or three scenes in every Jackass film I like. Wow, that was clever. That was quite interesting. I like that. That was funny. 75% of it is just disgusting. And I want to be somewhere else. And I want to unsee it and take it out of my mind. And I have the right...
Take the rough with the smooth, though.
I have the right to have that opinion. And I just feel like I get absolutely rinsed every time. Like, it's not just me. It's like on the internet. If anybody has, like, says that about Jackass, if anyone even says it's stupid, which they say it is, and they celebrate that it is,
yeah.
And they get absolutely destroyed. And I don't... There's this huge, like, knee-jerk defense and, like, glorification of what is so... simple, and I don't understand it. It's basically 1,000 people across the world missing the point of what it is, which is supposed to, like you said, it's supposed to just be fun. It's supposed to just be a night out. And yet you get debate after debate about anyone who says this is not good getting absolutely destroyed. And I think that is just, that's useless.
Maybe people should just shouldn't debate about Jackass.
They shouldn't.
It.
This
they
is
shouldn't
the thing.
Know.
I don't care. I don't
which
want to
is
talk
why, which
about
is,
it.
I guess is why you didn't give it a
this
like
is the
a
thing.
Rating.
I genuinely think it doesn't matter. And what I've seen one Jackass movie, maybe mattered a little bit. The third one doesn't matter to me as a film critic. It doesn't matter to me as a film fan. And I, you know, I want...
It's pretty fucking funny, though.
I don't know. I laughed probably as much as I did at this as... I don't know.
Too late?
Probably, yeah. Like, I can't remember too many more laughs. I definitely squirmed a lot more at Jackass than I did Due Date. And I don't know. I'm not having fun at these movies anymore. And I have, you know...
I'll admit that the third one, it didn't feel as fresh or...
I
didn't
know.
Enjoy it
yeah.
as much as I did the other two.
Yeah.
Especially...
That's not to say
the thing is, I like the second one a lot.
Bad.
I don't know why. I love the second one
it's
so much.
It's a really good film.
It's a good film. And it's got that great Western opening and really cool Buster King ending. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. When they do that kind of thing, it's like my favourite moment of Jackass 3D is when Johnny Knoxville danced to Willie Nelson. I thought that was the funniest, most inspired bit of visual like comedy. And the whole thing. And there wasn't anybody getting shit thrown on their head and there wasn't anybody getting injured. And that was the bit that I liked the most.
By the way, Johnny
and,
Knoxville,
you know,
he is just insane now.
Yeah.
Like, there was like a little bit of humanity left him in the second one. Like, he was kind of like the Jack Nicholson Joker in that one. And now he's just turned into the Heath Ledger Joker.
Yeah.
And it's just frightening. He's a frightening man.
Mm. He's scary.
Yeah, I don't care about
awesome.
This movie.
And really awesome.
We're cutting it off.
If he started a cult, I would totally join.
Because we can't talk about Jackass anymore.
Yeah.
That's way too much as it is. It doesn't deserve conversation. It deserves...
Then why did you go on a 30-minute rant?
I didn't go on a 30-minute rant. It's just like I said, you guys were praising it so much. I don't understand.
Me and Jamie both said we didn't think it was that great. We thought it was, you know...
I know, it's not. I know. I get that. This is your disappointment. But like you said, you love Jackass too, and you
yeah,
think
Jackass
it's this great
freaking
thing.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's wicked.
I don't...
So many great nights just watching Jackass.
It literally is the movie version of Jeffrey Dean Morgan. I don't get it. I don't get why it's so important to people. All right.
Let's move on.
We'll move on. To which, I had it written down, but it was a question along the lines. I forgot my notepad, but you can't see that.
Hang
so
on,
I told
I can kind of remember, I think.
Well, no, I know what it was. It was, can a film that only tries to entertain be a 10 out of 10 movie?
Yep.
Discuss. And what do we think?
That's
about
quite
it?
Appropriate that we just talked about Jackass.
Yeah, I know.
Not that I would ever say Jackass is a 10
but
out
I don't think
10.
Jackass counts as a film.
Well, forgetting the entertainment thing, I think there's pretty much no movies that are 10 out of 10 movies anyway. Maybe the question should be altered to nine.
See, I disagree with that. I reckon I could
movies.
Probably get 50.
How many movies have you given a 10 to?
I've never given it, but I've been doing this 3 years.
No.
I've given Exorcist, yeah.
Like films that you've reviewed,
I reckon,
in retrospect.
I've given no new releases 10, but I reckon there's 50 films I would give 10, probably.
Mm. See, for me, I don't think there's enough 10 films to even ask the question, can a film that's just entertaining be a 10? Because 10 would be really a really specific kind of film, and you hardly ever give any 10s.
All right, so
the
you
chances
get
are that
question.
It's not going
to
be.
All right,
so can it be a
let's
great
rephrase
film?
That to be a great film then instead
yeah.
of you know pedanticism. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What would you give Die Hard, Jamie?
Die Hard, an 8, possibly a 9.
I think it has to be a 9.
I'll give it an 11.
I don't know. This is the thing. It's like when you look at Die Hard and you
no,
go...
No, I'm going to say 9. I'm
it's a
9
movie. It literally is a perfect, almost like masterpiece of a genre. And
yeah.
It literally has one of my favourite performances that I've ever seen. And, you know... It,
wait,
it,
what,
it,
what,
it,
what
it
are you talking about? Hans or Bruce?
No, I'm talking about Al.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about Alan Rickman. No, Alan Rickman's great and he's literally one of my favourite villains in anything.
Yeah.
And it's just... It's like entertainment, like, perfection, isn't it? And I think that kind of... success, well, that's hard to do, And succeeding in that kind of way should be rewarded as much as succeeding in a drama about someone
Let's also mention Ellis. Every time I watch Die Hard, I like Ellis's performance more and more. It's ridiculous. You know,
he's
the coke thing.
Yeah, he's
the
yuppie. He's awesome.
David, you're on a run of defending douchebags today. What's going on?
Yeah, that's because it's funny. Mm.
Okay.
Ellis is great. Anyway.
That's crazy.
Yeah, no, I think when a film of a certain genre, like, really, really nails that genre and becomes, like, a perfect film of that genre, then, like, whatever the genre is, it's always going to be a real high score.
I'd give Dawn of the Dead 10 out of 10.
Yeah, but you love zombies.
I do, but forgetting that, I think, and I wouldn't be the only one who says this, it gets 5 stars out of an 8, it's considered a classic, but people wouldn't, like, compare it to, say, like...
Citizen Kane.
Exactly, but let me submit this to you. What would you give The Third Man?
I haven't seen The Third Man.
The Third Man is a genre film, as far as I'm concerned, that only tries to entertain, and yet everybody would give it 10 out of 10 because it's important in cinema history. And it just seems like when you get
maybe in like 30 years' time.
Modern genre films, they just don't get the same treatment. You know, it's like Dawn of the Dead is a classic. It changed so many. It did so many stuff right.
Dark Knight is a genre film, and that got a lot.
Dark Knight is a genre film.
So when we say films that are trying to entertain, are we basically just saying genre films now?
We're saying films that are trying to entertain in any capacity. I mean, Dark Knight, I think it doesn't quite fit, because I think what people loved about it is that it moved away from trying to entertain and tried to be a serious, dramatic, kind of impactful
What about
thing.
Things like, I don't know, Indiana Jones, then? That's pretty much...
Indiana Jones, this is the thing. None of us would give Star Wars anywhere near 9 out of 10, I assume. And I wouldn't give Indiana Jones 9 out of 10 either, because I
Raiders think... Lost Art might get a good 8.
I think 8, yeah. I mean, the stuff I don't like about it, I mean, you know, it's traditional. I always have problems with all Spielberg's films, really, with the gooiness, and I don't think that goes away.
It's well gooey.
He's well gooey.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But there's like...
A lot of goo.
There's like, in the history of film, there's like more than like 10, 20 entertainment films that literally couldn't be better. And I think they need to be rewarded for that. And I just feel there's a double standard about subject matter. And that shouldn't matter to how a good film is.
There is, but at the same time, like, from reading your blog, I think there's very, very few entertainment films you would give a 10 to.
I think I was... The biggest mistake that I've ever considered that I've ever done is giving District 9 7. That was stupid.
What about giving Dr. Parnassus 7?
That was 6.
That was worse.
You gave it 7.
Did I give it 7?
Yeah. It's a 6 movie. I don't feel bad about that at all.
Anyway,
District 9, I think, is probably a 9 now, having watched it again. I don't know. I wouldn't
say that.
This is the thing. I reckon you say that now. In 10 years, right?
Eight.
In 10 years, people are going to look back at District 9 and start giving it these ratings. I'm so certain of that, because it was so like unique in what it did. And that now we're like, oh, no, it's all right. But as time goes past, these things start getting recognised. So when Die Hard came out, how many like 9 to 10 out of 10 reviews do you think it got? I reckon very few.
Yeah. Mm. I reckon a lot of 4 stars.
Yeah, but even so, like, I still think District 9 is not that good. It's really good. It's good, but it's not great.
I disagree. I think it did so much right, and the performances and the character and like the action and like the it just gets everything that it could have got right. I mean, the only problem I have with it is that it cheats out on the mockumentary thing, but I find myself not caring about that watching that movie. It just decides that it's not doing it anymore. But
yeah,
I just think.
I actually don't like the mockumentary thing at the start.
I love both halves, and I literally think that was such the worst thing I've ever done on my blog. I think was give District 9 7 out of 10.
I
think about it, and it makes me devalue my own opinion so much. Mm-hmm. It was such a bad mistake. But it's not. It's not just that. It's like stuff from the 90s. What do you give Speed?
You haven't seen Speed?
No.
What's wrong with you?
See, I think that's a 9 out of 10.
Keanu Reeves
in,
so I'll avoid it.
It's awesome.
And it's like, if this is the no one has problems with giving The Matrix 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10.
How can you grow up in the 90s and not watch Speed?
That is pretty atrocious.
Just never got around to it.
Yeah.
That's a perfect
too busy watching Tarkovsky and Kurosawa.
Mm. The thing about, like, the Speed is a perfect entertainment, like The Matrix, for example.
Yeah.
It has that intellectual stuff about it, but what people liked about it is the entertainment stuff, but they feel okay giving it 10 out of 10 because of the philosophy.
Whereas Speed doesn't really have any.
But exactly. If The Matrix was just the philosophy and it was people sitting in a room, it was just that Morpheus exposition sequence all the way through, then it wouldn't be considered as good as it was. And it was the entertainment aspect that made it such a great film.
And the slow-mo.
And the slow-mo, exactly. People shoot guns in slow-mo. That was what people remember from The Matrix. There's a huge, like, people not feeling comfortable, like, enjoying themselves and doubting that.
Mm.
I mean, I know I do sometimes, and when I'm having fun, I'm like, really, am I having fun? Or being
it's like you have to give a Michael Haneke film, like, a 9.
Exactly. And
even though you never want to watch it again.
But
whereas
example,
I could watch Speed every day for the rest of my life.
I would confidently say that Die Hard is better than The White Ribbon. I have no problem saying that at all. But I think nobody else is going to say that because White Ribbon is such a grueling experience.
You've got to remember, though, like everyone has different tastes.
Oh, no, everyone does have different tastes.
There are people who genuinely enjoy The White Ribbon.
That's what I'm saying. Right. But it's, no one would argue it's a film that tries to entertain. I don't think anybody in the world would argue that. But it's subjectivity, isn't it? And obviously that's a subjective example. But I'm saying as a principle, I feel that when people go in to, like, I don't know, like...
You almost need two separate scores. Like,
this is the thing.
It's a good film and entertainment level.
Yeah,
it's like White Ribbon, 10 out of 10 film. Like, 5
enjoyment
out of 10.
Enjoyment level, yeah. 0, yeah.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, I mean, like, Three Kings is another interesting one. Because I think Three Kings, people, if it was just the first 45 minutes, I think people would have problems going, oh my God, it's so great. But the fact that it turns serious in the latter half means people feel okay about giving it a good review. But I prefer the first half. I think that is so perfect. Like, until, and then when it starts to get a bit serious, I'm thinking... getting a bit
I know what you mean, but I actually think one of the good things about Three Kings is it does do the kind of switcheroo.
It does.
The old switcheroo.
It entirely changes tone. I think both halves are good, but I think I definitely prefer the first half.
Mm-hmm. And you enjoy the first half.
I enjoy the first half.
I think Three Kings is a surprising film. And
it is.
And most of the best films like ever made are the films that you find surprising, that you don't expect stuff happening in. I'm not talking about twists. I'm talking about a sudden shift in tone that really works. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the best movies around have that.
Okay, and here's like another interesting thing of like the double standard. What, Toy Story 3? Movie that only tries to entertain.
Yeah, but it's perfect at entertaining.
Exactly, people have no problem giving that to
and
that.
And also
it's so
kids' films are different though, aren't they?
I think also like Pixar are just on such a good run.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's impossible
to
ignore how great they are.
That is a 10 out of 10.
So even if they do release something that isn't a 10 out of 10,
The thing is, though, if a film's demographic like that's demographic is children, they're going to give it better reviews if it's just set out to entertain.
But
whereas if it's for adults, they want their intellectualism. And
yeah,
stuff like
this
that.
Is the mindset. They go into a kids movie having lower standard, and therefore when the kids movie is good, they tend to overrate it. And I'm not saying Toy Story 3 is overrated. I think it's amazing, and it rightly so.
I think that's something which is going to change, though.
But this is the thing: when they go to like entertain movies aimed at adults, they go eight is the limit and it will not be exceeded by anything no matter how good it is. It's like in stuff like The Guardian, even when Dark Knight came out, when stuff like The Guardian, The Independent and Sight and Sound and things like that, it wouldn't break 4 out of 5. It wouldn't anywhere. And that's the thing. Imagine if that had come out as an indie movie and it was directed by Haneke and it was all about people being silent in a bat costume and Joker makeup. I don't know.
You see a lot of Guardian independent reviews give main blockbuster films 5 out of 5 stars.
They do,
well.
But they do the thing, like I said, the lower standard. They'll give stuff like Fantastic Four and Hellboy, things that are like a bit lighter, but when like entertainment really comes along.
I don't think you can group Hellboy with Fantastic Four.
I think Hellboy 2 is just kind of average, to be honest, and Hellboy 1.
You're wrong. You're completely wrong.
In what capacity? How is it good?
Because you're comparing it to the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, I think
which is a 5, Hellboy's a 7.
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't see what the fuss about Hellboy is. I mean, I love Pan's Labyrinth as much as everybody else, but I think people tend to overrate Hellboy because it's got Guillermo del Toro attached to it.
I think that's
maybe
fair.
They rate it higher because it's better than.
I don't. If Fantastic Four is 5, Hellboy is 6, and Hellboy 2 is 5 or 6 for me. It was just a mess of imagery. And if you like that imagery, then great. But I mean, production design isn't the highest on my list of what I'm going for a film. And
it's not just production design, though. It's a good character and it's a good story. Yeah,
For once, I'm kind of siding with Louis over you, actually, because I thought Hellboy was okay.
Basically, it's almost like you can't win, because Guillermo del Toro's name's on it, everyone's going to overrate it. If anyone else's name was on it, then it would just be an average film, because it wouldn't be Guillermo
del Toro. The thing is, I think
they're
both good films.
I think you kind of want it either way, really, and I think it is a good film, and perhaps you're not acknowledging that, because Pan's Labyrinth has come before that.
Or perhaps I'm not acknowledging it because I genuinely, and believe me from the bottom of my heart, I think it's okay.
That I think it's better than okay. I'm not saying it's great.
I just think it's okay. There are
anyway,
some cool sequences,
isn't
in it?
The
but this is not the point.
Show.
Yeah. So basically, rounding off that idea, what do we think about that? Do we think that there's a double standard?
I think Jamie was onto something quite interesting when you said you should have reviewed like a good film level and an enjoyment level review.
Yeah.
Because it's two different things, I think.
I don't know how I feel about that, because again, that implies that there's two different categories, and it seems like doing well in one isn't worth as much as doing well in the other.
You gave The Killer Inside Me a reluctant 8.
Yeah.
You were really unsure about how to rate it. But how entertaining would you say that film is?
I've had it very entertaining, but
yeah.
I'm a psycho.
You are a
so.
Weirdo. The thing is, I didn't, again, that
I didn't
was,
find it entertaining.
I think that's not a movie about entertainment necessarily, so that might not be the best. But, I mean, an example like that, for example, like, entertainment doesn't have to be blockbuster. It can be, you know, Pulp Fiction, which I think is an entertainment film through and through before it's anything else.
Absolutely.
And that is a 10 out of 10 movie.
Yeah.
You know? I
it's a very original story.
It's very original,
though.
And there's a lot working for it, but I'm, like, when you watch Pulp Fiction, I don't think it wants to do anything else more than entertain you.
No, definitely not.
And it just gets everything so right in that capacity.
It's like pure entertainment. Almost.
Exactly. And I think in that regard, when it's in the context of an indie film with a director with a credible name, they feel okay about it. But Die Hard, no, because it's called Die Hard, and it's got John McTiernan, it's got Joel Silver's name attached to it, and they have to you have to be wary. I just...
See, I think...
Prejudging, I think is what's
people's
going on.
Names attached to stuff and like stuff being challenging, I think sometimes people misunderstand for something being good when it not
this is the thing I
not necessarily is good.
Like, I think the point about this whole thing and how it comes about is it's people pre-deciding what they want to see out of film,
and it's reviewers not wanting to look stupid on
exactly
their
they want to play like, safe. It's like, remember that guy who gave Fantastic Four 5, he literally got annihilated.
Yeah.
But I respect him for doing that.
But no, but you shouldn't, though, because he retracted it. He was like,
he retracted it. He shouldn't have done that. That was being a pussy.
He was like, yeah,
but
I'm sorry. I was like,
if he liked it
that
much, he should give it 5. He shouldn't have to apologize for his opinion. And I feel like there's too much of an air of that. Too much of people saying, if I give this 5 stars, am I going to look stupid? And I don't. That's bad criticism. It makes people think these films are worse than they are. And, you know, people need to grow some balls.
Yeah, you have to be honest to give Avatar a 4.
Exactly.
Or a 3.
Yeah.
But then you might get
or
killed by
2.
A...
yeah.
Avatar should have 2 ratings, one which is the film, the other which is the visual.
The thing about Avatar, I literally don't. I think every conversation.
Let's
ever
save.
Had about
let's
it,
save Avatar. For
we'll
me.
Save it. Yeah. Okay. So that.
Because we've got James Cameron coming.
Do we got anything else to say on entertainment, or are we pretty much?
No.
Wrapping that up. All right. So yeah, Die Hard is great. Is the lesson of that?
It's a ten.
It's a ten.
That, we're going to come to that conclusion at the end of every podcast.
That is just.
P.S. Die Hard is great.
This is now for future reference called the Die Hard is Great podcast. That's what's going to be the title of it. Okay. So we'll move on to the last segment, which is filmography, and this week we've done James Cameron, so we don't have to watch any movies to do research, which we love doing. So, Piranha...
A very modest man.
A very modest man. Piranha 2 The Spawning, guys.
I've seen that, yeah.
I haven't actually seen that.
I have seen that as well. I cannot believe that just happened.
Is that,
well,
that's the one where they start flying, yes?
It is. I watched it on YouTube. I can't even remember why I did that, but I thought it would be funny.
The whole thing's a big metaphor for, like, the war in Iraq, though.
Yeah.
It's on Channel 5 on repeat, that film. Just turn on Channel 5 and there's flying piranhas.
Lance Henriksen.
That's their emergency slot.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I remember one of them grabs a guy by the beard and then picks him up by the beard. That was quite cool.
That was quite pretty cool. And I thought Lance Henriksen was good in it, but yeah.
It sounds better than Avatar.
He was better. In comparison,
I enjoyed it more.
To the best of the cast of Piranha 2 This Morning, I think Lance Henriksen was good.
Yeah.
But no,
we're going to spend this long on Piranha, Jesus. Is it
so yeah,
long?
We're just going to talk
let's
about
just,
this.
Let's just say.
So we're just, yeah, it's terrible. So we'll move on to The Terminator.
I can't believe that was just Piranha 2 to The Terminator.
Yeah.
That's just bizarre.
But basically, yeah, he was a hired hand for Piranha, and now he's actually being good. So The Terminator is amazing.
Yeah, really is.
Pretty damn awesome. Dated.
It's not just,
despite
yeah,
being
80s
as fuck.
Incredibly dated.
It is.
Dated.
Incredibly dated, but a genuinely, like, good, awesome film.
It
fantastic
is.
Idea.
Yeah,
there are a few Cameron moments in it, though. Like,
there are a few Cameron moments.
Any time Michael Biehn talks...
Exactly. Can we just say straight away that James Cameron's dialogue is probably the worst thing about
oh
all his films.
Oh my god, it's appalling.
Is that are we all in agreement
with
that?
No, that's fair. That's very fair.
Yeah, I think we kind of already did that with our opening.
Yeah.
Yes, this is terrible. We love it anyway. But the thing in
but
the Terminator...
That's not what James Cameron does. He's a spectacle director.
Yeah, he is. And I think it doesn't matter so much in adult films like Terminator or Aliens because he can use the word fuck and it is a crutch and it makes it seem less fake than when it just is Avatar or when it's like, you know, when it's PG-13 and you have
Titanic.
To... There's no crutch.
What's Titanic?
It's just,
PG.
Yeah, it was.
Like, what is it? I've never heard of that film.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was funny.
Are
we
going
to
talk about it?
We probably will.
I won't be able to contribute a thing.
I haven't seen it in a while, and I don't plan to either. But anyway,
yeah,
Terminator. Let's not get jip on the Terminator.
What I find weird about Terminator is it's Linda Hamilton, isn't it?
Yeah.
She's actually good in that film, whereas in the second one, I think she's a
I think she's good in the second one, too.
She was full retard in the second one, but
yeah,
she is still good in it.
I think she's still good in it as well.
I don't know, I think she's a bit cringe.
I think she's more cringe than the original.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe I just don't like her.
Dave,
just varying degrees
of
cringe.
I can't even balance my checkbook. I don't know. So there's a lot of cringe in them, particularly when she's being a normal person and being exasperated.
Yeah. Okay.
And Michael Biehn isn't great, but I think we can all agree.
I like Michael Biehn; he's cool.
Michael Biehn does what Michael Biehn does.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
He's all right. I don't mind him. He's kind of that Bruce Campbell charming,
yeah, exactly,
terrible kind of thing.
B-movie actor, definitely.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, the best performance in The Terminator. Probably.
Yeah. Definitely.
He doesn't have to say anything. Yeah. And he just gets to be quiet.
But he does it so well.
He does it, he literally, I think, when he doesn't have to speak, I think he can be quite good. Because he gets the intimidating, he gets that air so right. And he literally is quite intimidating.
He's a good physical actor.
Exactly. Even with the context of knowing that's Arnold Schwarzenegger, you lose it in that character, don't you? You're thinking, yeah. I'm scared
Which
by this guy.
Which is the only time I think that's ever happened in an
It literally is. Everything else, you just see Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. But here you see the Terminator, and I think that's the only time that happens, really.
What end of days?
But no, it's great. And it's like, I think what's great about it, again, is it's like it's exciting. It's almost like it gets the entertainment after
it's
it.
It's a thrill ride.
And there's so many great sequences that I could just throw out now. I won't, because everybody's seen it and everybody knows them. But it's like the bit in the club, like the bit. It's just, it's great.
The multi-story car park.
Exactly. It's just so many great action scenes.
And it's cheap. Like, they did and that action
exactly.
film
and
it's
cheap,
on a low
there's
budget.
A couple of bits which are like, wow. Like the bit where he's taking himself apart in the mirror.
Yeah.
That looks so cool. Like, animatronics just look amazing. I think CGI people, like, they just need to get, like, lower the CGI and amalgamate it with the animatronics more, because it just looks so good.
This kind of thing looks better than, like, bad CGI in movies now. Movies that can't really afford CGI, but do it anyway. That looks terrible. I think this looks pretty good like that.
Yeah.
If I did have a problem with it, though, it is the flash forwards to the future, which I kind of like.
And Arnie's haircut.
I don't look good. Yeah, Arnie's haircut is... No, I'm fine with Arnie's haircut. I'm okay.
I can't remember it. It didn't strike me as weird.
It's not that obnoxious.
It's a little bit weird. Here's a question. Why, in Terminator Salvation, just to bring that up briefly, don't worry, we'll glaze over it. At the end, spoiler alert, when he fights a massive Arnie again, why does the Arnie have the hair from Terminator 2? Wouldn't it be the hair from Terminator 1? Because that would be the first Arnie.
That's a huge, important matter.
Oh my god. I think the world has just stopped.
Yeah. Give me an answer, Louis. Give me an answer.
I'll tell you why, because they don't care.
Give me a proper answer.
You
were the only guy in the world who stood up.
I was
in
the
cinema.
What the
I guarantee
fuck?
You, right? There's like a best boy.
Plot hole!
There's a best boy who comes across that bit of information and goes, guys, look at this. And MCG just like, I don't care.
The brother got bitch slapped.
He did.
He's like, script supervisor's there checking continuity.
I'm MCG. I directed Charlie's Angels. Do I care about that?
Do you reckon with those time travel movies, like the script supervisor has like loads of notes from all the previous films?
I think they must have
script
like
supervising on Terminator must be a fucking
I think
bitch.
Again, there would have been like that in Terminator 2. Terminator Salvation, I don't think they care.
Terminator Salvation, they're just like, fuck it, just chuck the Terminator name.
Terminator 3 as well, it makes no sense in comparison to everything else.
If we don't
stay
the course, we're dead. We're all dead!
Classic Christian Bale in that movie. Classic.
Has he made a film since then?
No. That's
hopefully he's taken some time out.
I'm fine with that, to be honest.
Was Public Enemies after?
I think it might have been before. I think that was
summer,
and that was September. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Anyway,
move on to Aliens, which I'm going to daringly say is my favourite James Cameron film, and your guys are going to probably give me shit about that. But
it's that or Terminator.
Yeah.
Or Titanic.
Or Piranha 2.
Yeah.
It's just awesome. It literally is one of those films.
I can't believe we didn't include
this
that.
This is times in this podcast that it ended up with, it's just awesome.
We're on the internet. That's like the only vocabulary we have, is to say something is awesome. But yeah, it's just like perfect entertainment.
It's just awesome.
You watch it and you just have a blast. And then that kind of movie is, again, I think it's quietly hard to do.
Exactly.
To make it as consistently entertaining
as
it is.
Very much fits into what we were talking about earlier with the whole entertain over thing.
Exactly, and it gets all the aspects so right. I don't even mind about the really lame relationship between Ripley and Newt.
Fuck off, Newt.
I mean, she is on a mission to destroy.
Oh,
that
man,
film.
Yeah. Well, there's one of those characters in every James Cameron movie, one of those really insipid, you know, like, I think John Connor's it in Terminator 2. I think, you know, the child is it in True Lies. We know all who it is in Avatar.
This isn't going to be like when we were doing Christopher Nolan. It was really hard to come up with one negative.
Oh, no, I can think of bad things about everything.
As good as Cameron is, there are lots of bad
things. He doesn't know how to write human beings.
Yeah.
He knows how to create awesome
human being himself.
He does.
He's an ego.
Yeah, he literally is. And he doesn't know how to write relationships and all of his... I mean, Bill Paxton, right?
Big shout to your boy, Bill Paxton.
Kind of annoying, a little bit.
Really?
The thing is, I love Bill Paxton. I think he's actually good, but he's bad in this movie.
Entertainingly bad,
again. I kind of think the movie's better for his presence in a way, because he's kind of... He is so ridiculous.
He is the most interesting character on screen in Aliens.
So we're not going to go for Michael Biehn again, are we?
That is awesome when he shoves the shotgun in the alien truck and says, eat this. Yeah. That's pretty fucking cool.
I kind of like... The thing... And this is a massive spoiler, but again, I assume if you listen to an internet podcast, you've probably seen Aliens. I like how people survived. I really do. I think, again, I love it when people who you're not expecting to survive And I liked that Michael Biehn survived.
I wanted him to survive.
I like the bit when Lance Henriksen gets ripped in half.
I know. That is awesome. That milk
comes out.
He's great. I like that.
I think these kind of movies are so much better when people you don't expect to survive, survive, even if the hero doesn't. And again, it's kind of a pitch black rule that I have.
Yeah.
Where if people survive who probably shouldn't have, it's great. And I think that's what's good about Aliens. And then Alien 3 just rinses them in the first 5 seconds.
Yeah, that was but that was just
whatever.
Like...
Yeah. Sigourney Weaver's great in this. And by the way, Sigourney Weaver is Oscar nominated for her performance in
Aliens.
For Aliens.
Wow.
She's an Oscar nominated performance.
It makes me upset that people can be Oscar nominated for a performance in a James Cameron film. they're not that good, are they?
I think that's the only time it's happened, right?
Yeah, but that's
Titanic.
That's like James Cameron films.
Who got nominated
Kate Winslet and the old woman.
It's like them getting nominated for like best original song though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
But no, I think we've
been in your pants, Academy.
I really do. I don't mind that nomination because I think she's really good in this and she works as a great anchor and you know, she's a powerful presence. She's a good hero.
She deserves it. You go, girl.
Cameron likes his feisty.
He does like his feisty women. I think this is the best of them though.
Yeah, definitely.
I think Ripley and Sigourney Weaver are just like such an iconic and powerful presence for them.
But I think Rodriguez in Avatar.
I think he does it better than
Zoe Saldana now.
He did it better than in Alien.
I think her character's much more defined in this than she is in Alien. Yeah. I think in Alien she's just kind of in the background for the first half and when
she's not the most interesting character.
She's not. I think Ian Holm probably for me.
I even like John Hurt before he gets murked.
I think Harry Dean Stanton is interesting because he gets murked.
Maybe, yeah.
Harry Dean Stanton gets an awesome death, but he does. He's just kind of not really in it.
What about Veronica Cartwright?
Irritating
performance. So that's another thing. It's a great movie, but Veronica Cartwright's in it. And that is more irritating than Newt, as far as I'm concerned.
Nah, nothing's more irritating than Newt.
Okay. She causes at least 3 deaths.
She does.
They mostly come out at night, mostly.
Mostly. Yeah, no. I think she's
almost as bad as... They're here!
She's not as bad as Dakota Fanning, who won the world, who literally gets 3 different members of her family killed by being a pussy.
She is a 12-year-old girl.
She is a 12-year-old girl. Yeah, but I'm saying, stop being such a chicken shit. You're getting people killed, Dakota Fanning. Anyway,
it's not the first time she's got people killed.
It's just selfish, is what it is. So we'll move on to The Abyss. Now, how many people have seen The Abyss?
I haven't seen The Abyss.
I've seen it.
Okay, what are your feelings on The Abyss?
I liked it until the end. How does that sound? Because that's pretty much.
I'll tell you what I like. This is my favorite Michael Biehn performance in a James Cameron movie.
Yeah, he's awesome, isn't he?
He's awesome in this. He's the bad guy, and he actually gets.
That's awesome.
I think that might have Die Hard is great, and that's awesome is the title of this podcast.
Okay.
But yeah, no, he's great.
Because he's the bad guy.
He's a good villain, and I think like the main characters are boring as fuck. Yeah. And it's quite.
Really
nice
don't like that Mary.
The one who's in Kevin Costner Bobby Hood.
Mastronome? I can't remember.
I don't want to risk pronouncing
it. Who cares?
Yeah, she's really...
Definitively, who cares? But yeah, Ed Harris is in it, and he's kind of boring, and I like Ed Harris, but he doesn't do anything in his movie.
But do you know, I don't know if I should spoil it or not, but do you know what I mean by it? It's quite good at the start.
It starts quite good, and some of the sequences underwater, but then the whole...
The end is ridiculous. The ending,
it belongs in a Spielberg movie.
In a bad Spielberg film.
I
think I know where this is going.
And it's got that terrible sequence. This isn't a spoiler, because it happens about halfway through. Where you think she's been dead, and then he keeps going, no, I'm going to save her, and then he goes on for about 5 minutes, and then she suddenly goes, and it's just like, no, James Cameron, fuck off.
Let her die, let the bitch die, James.
But no, it wasn't that she survived, it was such a lame cliche of a thing, and it was just, I didn't care, and where's Michael Biehn? I want him back, I want him to be awesome.
I want Mr. Biehn back.
He's good in this, I think, legitimately, whereas I don't think you can say about anything else that he's done.
Planet Terror.
But like, The Abyss is okay.
Say what you want about that film. He's awesome in that.
Nobody's awesome in that. Yeah.
The Abyss is okay. It's okay. It's not
solid entertainment. It's way too long. It's got a terrible ending.
I don't have any desire to watch it again.
It's the worst James Cameron film, even more than Avatar for me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm. Even more than Piranha 2?
What?
I'd actually rather watch Piranha 2 again than that again.
Piranha 2 is one of the better ones. No, Terminator 2.
Yeah, good.
Do you want to go first? Because you couldn't comment on The Abyss.
Okay. Terminator 2... a seminal action film. Still, even now, I think some of the best stunts.
Yeah.
I think even now, it doesn't look dated.
The real effects, explosions. The effects still look amazing.
The CG and the T-1000 still looks strong, right?
Which is amazing when you consider how old it is and how stuff that's tried to do pretty much exactly the same thing with characters morphing looks so much worse.
For example, that looks as good as like the Silver Surfer did in Fantastic Four 2, and they're a similar thing, and he looks as good as him, and his is 1991,
and that's 2005
20 years ago, and that was like 2008, and it's And it's just, it stands up, and it's just great. And even with the really, again, insipid John Connor,
yeah,
who's irritating.
I don't mind John Connor too much.
He's less, he's not as, he's bad not as new. New. He's not new, but there's like I said, the scene in the beginning, which we did, and there's a few others as well. Particularly his introduction, where he's like on the bike, and he's like, oh,
it's
just
because James Cameron's like, kids are going to think this guy's the coolest
James
kid
Cameron.
Ever.
He's going to go to arcades, he's going to have a scrambler bike, he's going to say, no problemo, because that's probably what James Cameron
thinks.
Yeah,
literally, James Cameron
like.
Shouldn't be allowed to ride children.
Maybe the early 90s, all kids were like him.
Maybe they were. They just watched MTV and liked
Unlikely.
Dire Straits. That seems to be his impression of kids.
We should say
Robert Patrick
does not
awesome.
Get the credit he deserves.
He's awesome, and people
he's
forget
incredible.
About him. Although, in fairness, the movie forgets about him for a long time.
Yeah, he's not in
like,
it. For
there's
like
a bit after the chase scenes in the tunnel. He literally disappears until the final bit.
I know, and you're kind of waiting for him.
I know, and I wanted
after
him
you've
back.
Seen the film a few times, you are really waiting for him.
Yeah, he. I think he's the best thing about it, like performance-wise.
And a word for the score, which is perfect.
The score is great.
Just
yeah.
his the theme of Robert Patrick, that you know, that kind of drone when he's around. And like it kind of makes the characters even more iconic. The music, I think.
What's your feeling on Arnie in this movie? I think he's good.
Yeah.
I think he manages like the stuff he has to do, which is like could have been awful, where he has to pretend to smile and pretend to like be a human.
Yeah, it kind of
and
works.
He's learning how to be a human as a robot. Here's how
it
to have a heart.
It could have been so much worse than it was.
That
think,
on paper sounds awful, but
and
it
I
works.
Think,
yeah.
I think. Arnie, not Cameron, makes that work.
Yeah, I think it's terrible writing some of it. It's like just smile, man, smile. And then he does like the really fake smile.
There are a couple of deliveries as well which he just nails.
He
like,
does.
He's really good with those
one-liners.
Even when he can like his grasp of English isn't very good, he still nails the one-liners. Even sometimes in a way they're not supposed to be nailed. Like he'll say the line slightly wrong, but it'll kind of work because it's Arnie.
But the thing about T2 again is probably going to be the action, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The action is incredible.
It's like up there with the best action on cinema as far as I'm concerned. It's just like the chase sequences in particular through
brilliant.
The tunnel and through the. And the one at the end as well. It's just great.
So long as well.
They go on for ages.
It's like
but
20 minutes.
I'm never bored. That's
no,
the
exactly
thing. And I feel like in another movie I would have been. And it works so well. It's great.
Yeah.
It is one of his more like well-defined films, I think.
Definitely. And it's got the great Joe Morton in it, who has like it plays Miles Dyson. He's one of those people that everyone recognises the face
of.
You
feel so sorry for him. It's such
a
limited
amount
of
tragic character.
Yeah.
He gets in, he gets shot in front of his children. He gets his work told that he's going to destroy the whale. He gets all his work destroyed and then he dies. And nobody cares.
To be honest, if he didn't
they just
die,
move on,
they just
know.
Walk up and
if he didn't die, he'd be screwed.
Yeah.
No job. Like your house is fucked. Like
he could have had a TV show called Miles Dyson: The Terminator Chronicles or something like that, where he goes on the road trying to like get rid of all the Terminators with Sarah Connor. That would have been awesome.
No.
I'm really sad that he died. I think he should have survived because he redeemed himself. You know,
it was
mean, James.
And
Cameron.
That was very un-James Cameron.
It was.
Usually, James Cameron rewards his characters.
Yeah, he does. It's like if they get nice guys, usually they get to survive. It's like. I guess this and when he rinses Bill Paxton in Aliens, the only time, two times he's been actually.
Although Bill Paxton deserves to die.
I didn't think he was gonna. When I first watched it, I thought he was gonna survive because he was such a presence. But he gets kind of pissed. But anyway, spoiler. But like I said, you've seen Aliens, so it's cool. Terminator 2, True Lies, I think.
I got a soft spot for True Lies.
I have a soft spot, even though I think it's not very good.
Yeah.
I kind of like it.
I think
Bill Paxton,
Jamie Lee Curtis, and Arnold Schwarzenegger work really well together.
They really shouldn't,
but they kind of do.
And this is Jamie Lee Curtis is like I think she's quite a gifted comedian. And although he doesn't always get some of the dialogue right, I think in this he is quite funny.
I think there's definitely a sense of like kind of ironic fun.
I think he's got a comedic timing. He just
see Jingle All the Way
or Kindergarten Cop, which is underrated.
Shut up.
I actually watched that on ITV3. It was great.
Oh,
it's classic.
Great.
It's a classic of our
time. I do love rewatching those films that when I was a kid I thought were actually good. And now I'm like.
It's not good, but you know.
It's
but it's Arnie, so it's cool.
Yeah.
But no, he's alright. And Bill Paxton is the best thing about True Lies. Can we say that?
Yeah,
he's really funny.
He's really funny.
It's alright, it's quite good.
This is the thing, I think Bill Paxton.
Tom Arnold.
Tom Arnold. Tom Arnold's the new to this movie. He's just like, James Cameron's like, oh, I'm gonna have this really funny sidekick, and then he casts Tom Arnold. And it's like, no. It just failed.
It's all about the hot girl from Wayne's World.
Tia Carrere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember. What's she? Who's she?
She's like, she dances in the beginning and then
bitch
comes
woman.
Back. Well, about Art Malik as an awesome terrorist.
I kind of like him.
I love the sequence where he's filming him and then they run out of battery. I think that's the funniest James Cameron sequence ever.
I just like that shot where he's riding a rocket.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Also, it's got Eliza Dushku as Arnie's kid, by the way.
Yeah.
At the age of 10. So, you know.
Who's he?
Is the girl. You know, Faith in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh yeah.
Or that's in nice. Dollhouse, the lead, which is a great show that nobody watches. Okay, so we'll move. Are we going to centralize? Fun?
Flawed
but fun.
It's
I think it's
the weird thing with all these James Cameron films is, flawed but good in the same way. Like,
I think
weird.
It's more flawed than Aliens or like The Terminator. There's more stuff wrong with it.
Is Titanic fun?
I've avoided Titanic.
I'll tell
my
you
life.
What,
so have I.
Well, by the way, we're on to Titanic now.
Excellent.
So, this is the thing about Titanic. We won't talk that much longer about it.
Before you say anything, can I just bring up the fact that there's three of us here. When you mentioned Piranha, two of us had seen it. Titanic, only Louis's seen it.
David, have you not
more
seen Titanic?
More people here have seen
I've seen Piranha.
Yeah, exactly.
You've not seen
saying.
Titanic either, yeah.
More of us have seen Piranha than Titanic.
Yeah, I've deliberately avoided
Titanic. I think that speaks to the dudeness of this podcast and that we don't have any vaginas here and that we just don't want to watch movies about love.
Yeah. I just like, it's on every Christmas, it's 4 hours long.
This is the thing about Titanic, right? The first hour is the worst piece of James Cameron schmaltz, painful dialogue thing that ever exists. And it's horrible. Even with Kate Winslet being quite good and almost saving it, and Leonardo DiCaprio being quite good as well, it's still excruciating. But the bit where the boat sinks is kind of awesome. And that looks kind of good. And it's kind of exciting. And there's people dying all the time, and it's great.
Just watch the second
just
hour.
Just tune in once the boat starts to sink, and I think...
How long does the boat sink for?
That's about an hour. And it's great.
Wow.
And it literally is like... It's like the best...
I'll watch that.
It's basically... like extended action sequence that doesn't really stop for a whole hour, and it just people get rinsed all over the place. It's great.
Was it worth the Kabillion Oscars it won?
No, and that's the fact that came out in the same year as LA Confidential, and that won everything, and LA Confidential won nothing except Kim Basinger, which is the worst thing about LA Confidential. Is ridiculous. I don't know.
Wow. That's like Braveheart winning Best Picture.
It literally is. Oh, like, there's so many of those. Yeah. Like 1994 when Shawshank Redemption and Pulp Fiction both lost to Forrest Gump. So. Yeah.
What a gym.
No, I mean, it's alright. I think it's a 7 out of 10 movie for the second half, which is awesome.
Okay.
But
maybe I'll watch the second half.
The first half is excruciating.
If it's a 7 out of 10 movie for the first half, how many points get deducted for the...
The first half, I think, is a 5. And the second half, I think, is possibly an 8 or a 9.
Wow. That high.
It's awesome. It literally is. It's like the...
Cool.
It's like the most elaborate action.
I'm still not going to watch it.
You're still not going to watch it. Because the romance aspect is a massive, massive failure. Alright, so we'll move on to his next film. Is it Avatar?
No, surely not.
I think it is. I mean, he did those documentaries where he went down in a submarine, but we don't care about those.
No,
so I think it literally is Avatar.
Yeah, that sounds right, actually.
He didn't
make
a film for 10 years because he decided that he was too awesome to.
Avatar, that overrated piece of shit.
Yes, we've never talked about Avatar on this podcast before, so this is the time to do it. So what did we think about
I remember when we came out, you didn't say it was an overrated piece of shit.
The first thing I said to you, I remember.
Louis did.
I said
I didn't say that I thought it was amazing or anything, though. Like,
no.
Everyone else seemed to
I just said no, if I recall. The minute the credits rolled, I went, no.
Yeah, no, Louis. But I think me and Jamie, when we were just like, that was pretty like...
But I don't think it's terrible.
I think realistically, like, if you're being fair, Avatar's a 5. It's a 10 for visual effects and a 0 for story.
Ooh,
I think that's mean. I think it's okay. My problem with Avatar is everyone thinking it's the new second coming of Jesus.
That's worse than if people had just said, yeah, it's an alright
Does anybody think that, though? I don't think anybody thinks that. I don't think anybody thinks it's the masterpiece that
I don't think any film students
A lot of critics
I don't think any film students
did. Critics did at the time. It was the same with the Titanic. They all got 5 stars thrown at it.
Mm.
But I think now, if you ask them again, they'd be like, actually...
It literally
is
people getting caught up in the experience and not realising it and then looking stupid afterwards.
It's the hype. It's like the hype and the experience.
It undoubtedly has its fans, as the 500 billion whatever it made the testaments to. And it did get amazing reviews. For a while, it was like 95% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
And I know it's gone down now, but...
Exactly, that's what my point.
People, this is the thing, but it's not gone down too much. It's still considered to be a very, very good movie.
It's still like 88 or something.
It is. It's very high. And it
absurd.
I don't know. I don't get it. I mean, the thing, I don't entirely hate the story. I hate the romance. I think that, again, is fail. And it's just James Cameron doesn't know how to do it.
Sam
Worthington is terrible.
Lead.
I like the bad guy. I think he's entertaining. And I think he's kind of unique. And he has that awesome sequence where he's on fire. And he just doesn't give a shit. And he just kind of jumps out of the plane.
I got time to bleed.
Yeah. Basically. And he was kind of cool. And I liked his performance. And I liked Giovanni Ribisi's performance.
Yeah.
And I kind of liked Sigourney Weaver's performance.
No.
But the main story, again, like Titanic, despite all the amazing visuals, is the romance, and it's painful, and it's
embarrassing.
Embarrassing.
I actually think, talking performances, I think Zoe Saldana is pretty good as the girl.
I think she's okay.
People
are
saying Oscar nomination. I didn't get that.
I
really
didn't.
I don't think
Oscar nomination, but
I think she's okay.
She's not as bad as Sam Worthington.
It's quite an adventurous, great performance.
Just like, there's so many moments in the film where, even while you're escaping in Pandora and stuff, you just like.
I think I want to submit this to you. I think
they connect their ponytails.
Is tacky.
Or when Michelle Rodriguez returns in a helicopter and she's got the war paint on.
Yeah, I think literally
what
the world.
We fucking ate.
It was a kids' movie through and through. But the world of Pandora, everything it got praised for, is tacky. I think it looks expensive. I think it's badly designed. I think it looks like an 80s club.
I read a review. I read a review and someone said, "Yeah, it just looks like the painting on the side of a stoner's van who listens to Rush too much."
It literally does. Everything is glow in the dark. That was just so lame, and it just—I don't think it looks.
It's just like 90s rave.
Yeah, I mean, the only bit like visually that I was like, "Whoa," was the bit where everything got blown up. And I was like, oh my god, that looks very impressive. But apart from that...
There's all the sad music and all the blue people getting killed. And I'm like, this is awesome.
It is. It's like...
Blow them up more.
It's the bit like where all the Ewoks get rinsed in Star Wars. It's supposed to be sad, but I'm like, yeah! This is awesome. Again, using that word.
But just to go back to the... trying to play devil's advocate, because I don't like it either, just to say that. But when I first saw it, I grinned so hard the first time when the first image came up and it was 3D and it looked awesome.
Yeah,
it does.
I was just like,
it was my first 3D film as well.
I think it was maybe mine.
I think it looks expensive, but I think the 3D works. I think what I'm looking at isn't very good at times, and like the design of it isn't very good. As rich and like expensive as it is, and I think you can see that money on screen. I just think it's kind of like someone who doesn't know how to design being given $20 million.
It is just like
it's very
Aliens, Warhammer, all these different
things. It's very childish.
It's very immature. It's an immature film through and through. Mm. Yeah.
But is it not meant for kids?
It's basically
maybe
a Halo game, isn't it?
This is the thing. I think Cameron's written that and it's supposed to be his masterpiece. I really do think it's supposed to be the best film he's ever made.
I'm sure he loves it.
And I think he did, and everybody loved it. And if you read interviews with James Cameron, he's pretty much under the impression that it is. And that, you know, if, for example, when he was talking about the Oscars, he was like, if anything else wins, I'm going to be like, you know, whatever. Mm. And he wasn't happy about it. And he's an unpleasant man.
So glad.
He's a douchebag. And this is an overrated movie. That is all there is to say about it. You know?
That's pretty much nailed.
What's his next one?
Avatar 2 and then Avatar 3.
Oh, God.
We're Avatar for the next 10 years, guys.
I'm not going to go and see them.
I am. Just out of intrigue.
Oh, well, I have to review them.
I'm not going to pay to see them.
Well, I'm not. I agree. I wouldn't pay to see them either. I agree. Yeah.
I'm going to pay to see them. I just want to see what happens.
Not because I think they're bad or anything. I don't want to give him any more money.
Well,
he's
just
a very rich
the
man.
The two most like financially successful films of all time are both by James Cameron. So.
Not rich enough, though. He doesn't have to re-release 10 minutes added to Avatar.
Oh, that was...
IMAX.
But that
you
bombed.
Greedy
that bombed.
Fuck.
That literally made
I'm
no money
so,
at all.
I'm so glad it
so
didn't.
That was kind of awesome. But it's basically James Cameron trying to steal your money, but like, oh yeah, everyone's seen it already? Oh right, I'm sorry.
How many people do you think are going to... The thing is, everybody saw it the first time. How many people are going to go and see it again? I have no intention.
I have no desire to see it
again
for
another
at all.
10 years.
I think the only reason to see Avatar is to see it in the cinema.
Absolutely. That's why I would pay to see the sequel, I think, just because I want to see it in the cinema.
But this is the worst thing about Avatar, right? Do you know there's the best friend and there's the scientist guy, right? And he has an Avatar, and the Avatar gets rinsed, and then he's a human. And he gets to stay on the planet Avatar when all the humans get taken away, and he has a gas mask. And he has to live on
the
planet
with
a gas mask
forever.
I thought that was so stupid. That literally, I was watching that. And
there
going,
were many things
that
could
is
go
retarded.
Wrong.
And exactly, you just what are you going to live 50 years?
There's all these
gas
like, there's all these hazardous creatures and like a crazy forest.
Yeah,
it's going to get knocked off at some point.
And by the way, are the humans just going to leave because they got beat in a battle? Are they not going to come back with nukes?
Has the Iraq War taught?
Well, that's the sequel.
That's
so
they must do because that was so stupid. It was
stay
like,
until you get terrorist attack to shit.
Yeah,
you get a tiny victory and then you pull out.
Exactly. Basically, if that had happened, they lost that battle, they would have flown up into the air and dropped a shitload of bombs on everything.
They should have just done that.
And that would have made more sense. And
they've destroyed the planet, and then with all their crazy super technology, somehow located this.
It was underground. It was underground.
Unobtainium.
Unobtainium.
Oh, come on. Unobtainium.
God, I love James Cameron. Unobtainium. Yeah, but the thing is, the stuff they wanted was underground, so they literally could have bombed all the surface, and they would have been fine.
Yeah.
They would have killed them all. And that's what they would have done after losing their battle. But, you know, it's a PG-13, so they don't think that way. Okay. Is that it? Anyone else want to say anything about Avatar?
Or Cameron.
It's a shame we don't have an Avatar defender on this podcast, really, because that would have been
Someone who loves the film to just go tell us why it's good.
Yeah, if
I don't know anybody who likes
I think
it.
Frankly, I'm puzzled.
I know somebody who likes the movie on our course. I won't say his name on podcast in case he gets embarrassed. But
okay.
TJ.
Oh, does this?
Lol. Sorry, Tom.
Credibility gone.
All right, so we're pretty much done then, I guess. I mean, next week is going to be a bit different. It may take a bit longer to do, but we're going to do this awesome TV podcast where we're going to basically look at with different groups of people.
Sparkle's Blunt Sand.
The best, yeah, we're not doing Sparkle's Blunt Sand. The best TV shows of the last decade. We're
Please let's do Sparkle's Blunt Sand.
Nobody is doing Sparkle's Blunt Sand.
I want to do Mad Men, I don't want to do Sparkle's Blunt Sand.
When you're doing Mad Men, you're not doing Sparkle's Blunt Sand. Nobody's doing it because it's rubbish. Alright?
Oh, so sure. Then you get to do Dollhouse or whatever.
I'm not going to do Dollhouse. I want to do Dollhouse, but I'm not going to because it's not that good. See the concession being made there. Alright, so that's going to happen. It's probably going to be in two parts, and that will be the next two podcasts. So we'll try and do the new releases as well.
So are you just going to forget about... Oh no, you're gonna
I'll do the new releases, and then we'll also do the TV stuff. So that might take a bit longer to get up because it's going to be quite a lot of recording. But, you know, hopefully it'll be there within a couple of weeks. So thanks for listening, and... Hasta la vista.